Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week we continue our look back at the 2019 season, and we are joined by the president of Salve Sports to talk about the Gary South Shore Railcats, Brian Leiter. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob and Kevin. Happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. We wanted to, first of all, kind of give the fans an opportunity to hear a little bit about you. So could you tell us a little bit about what you do with the organization and kind of how you got started in that?
Sure. So I'm heading in what is going to be my 11th season in minor league baseball. I started out back in 2009 as a stadium operations intern for the Arkansas Travelers. At the time, the AA affiliate of the Angels. They're now with the Mariners, and spent four seasons with them. Coming up, working in stadium operations for a couple of years, you know, the glorified things in minor league baseball, cleaning toilets and blowing the stands down after games and mowing grass and weed eating and all those fun things that nobody really gets to think that gets done. And then I transitioned into a front office role where I started becoming a sales executive and working on merchandise. And then I transitioned into running an in-house food and beverage operation. And then I had the fortune to come up here to Gary and work with the Railcats. And I spent five seasons, I guess, as the general manager, where I oversaw all the day-to-day operations for just the Railcats, and then had the fortune to become the president of Salve Sports, where we had three baseball teams, and now we're down to two. We have the team, the Railcats, obviously, in the American Association. We have the Schaumburg Boomers of the Frontier League, and we just sold our Futures Collegiate Bat League team that we had out in Boston just under 2 months ago now. So I oversee all of those teams from an executive level and work day-to-day with the general managers of each of them with sales, operations, marketing, municipalities. I'm our team liaison to all of our leagues and on behalf of our owner. So it keeps me pretty busy.
Do you ever want to harken back to your stadium op days and want to clean a bathroom on occasion, or are those days behind you?
No, absolutely. Actually, one of my I definitely scrub the toilet at least once this year. I'm a big fan. If I see a spill on the concourse, I have no problem going and grabbing a mop or a broom and a dustpan and taking care of that. I mean, that's all part of the allure of working in minor league baseball.
You know, I have to tell you, that's a really interesting story, Brian, because Mike Vec, the owner there in St. Paul, told me one time, he said, the great thing about minor league baseball is 1 year you're selling tickets and 4 or 5 years later you're the general manager. And boy, you're sure living that out.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, you just, I talk to an awful lot of young folks, and I just tell them, just keep saying yes, and eventually you're going to get to do really good things. So I guess I said yes just enough times where somebody was either smart enough or silly enough to give me an opportunity to run things. So,
wow, that's really an amazing story there, Brian. Well, let's talk a little bit about kind of your role. You were the GM there in Gary, one of the more interesting teams in the American Association for a lot of people, because manager Greg Taggart runs a different kind of ball club and the way the style of play is there. So, first of all, Gary, not the easiest ballpark to hit in. That's a great advantage for the club, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting. And if you haven't come out to the ballpark in a while, as some of the other executives in the league, I guess a good example is when we had St. Paul out for playoffs a couple of years ago, Derek Scherer and Tom Whaley came out, and you just forget just how big the ballpark plays. And they're like, now they understand. They're like, I haven't been out here in whatever, 8, 9 years. I understand why you guys play such small ball. It's because we have big high fences. I mean, it's not like the distances are crazy. It's 330 down the line, which is not outrageously long, but it's, you know, it's decent. But we're right, you know, less than a half a mile off of Lake Michigan, and the wind blows in probably 80 or 90% of the time, and it's just not ultra conducive to home run hitting. And so Greg goes about it a little differently and putting together lineups to work the count and draw walks, hit and run, you know, bunt guys over, those kind of things, and then play just a little bit differently than baseball's played in most places these days.
Do the fans tend to accept that and just know that that's the way the team has to play, or have they ever gotten impatient and wonder, well, why don't we get any of the big home run hitters? Or is there a pretty good understanding?
Yeah, there's definitely some understanding, but there's also definitely a segment of them that would love to see the big home run hitters come in. I think, you know, and to some extent, some years we've had a little bit more luck with that than others. we've taken some chances on bringing some guys in that we thought were going to hit some home runs and didn't. And the challenge is not being frustrated with the ballpark early in the season if it doesn't happen, right? So guys that, you know, home runs at other ballparks are just warning track flyouts. And one of the big comparisons I put is the ballpark I worked at in Little Rock, was right on the Arkansas River and was not a home run hitter's ballpark. And I tell our guys is, you know, Mark Trumbo was there who hits 30, 40 home runs a year now in Major League Baseball. He hit 12 that year, you know. So, you know, trying to find the guys that aren't going to get frustrated with that has been a challenge over the last 4 or 5 years. But certainly there's a segment of fans, and who doesn't want to see a home run here and there? So we'll always explore options to add that into the mix if we can find the right guy.
You know, I'm kind of curious. You have probably one of the, you know, 9 or 10 best players in the league and Colin Willis out there. Are fans embracing and kind of recognizing how really good this guy is?
No doubt, and especially, you know, he's not from there. He grew up in Sheboygan, but he went to school at what used to be Purdue North Central. It's now Purdue Northwest, so local. He lives in Miller, you know, about 10 minutes from the ballpark. So, yeah, there's a big one. And then, you know, I'm sure you guys are aware he got an opportunity about 3 weeks ago. He got signed by the Red Sox to go out and fight for a spot in one of their minor league affiliates this spring. So we're super happy for him. Couldn't have happened to a better guy. And the fans definitely were drawn to him. Some of that's because we have him around during the offseason to go do some appearances and those kind of things. But he's just a really good guy, and, you know, nose to the grindstone, you know, same routine, really even keeled. Just a great guy to have on the roster.
I don't know if you heard the story, but in the All-Star game, when he came in, all of us in the press box knew we had to have our votes in for the MVP of the All-Star game by the end of the next inning. And he came in and got on base. And we're still all kind of scrambling, like, who are we going to vote for? Who are we going to vote for? Well, then right before our votes had to get in, he hits, I believe it was like a 2 RBI double.
Yep.
And I think everybody in the press box scribbled out who they had voted for and wrote in Colin Willis. It was like probably like a last minute unanimous vote.
That's wonderful. That's great. I was at the game this summer, and I saw him shortly after the game ended, and he was so happy because his mom was there, and his sister, and his nieces and nephews were all able to come up and watch him. And I think he was one of those, probably the highlights of his time in Gary, was getting to go be a part of that and have the opportunity to drive in a couple of runs and win the MVP. He was, I don't know if he could have been much happier.
You know, Brian, every year I think we go through the routine of people saying, they look at the Gary South Shore roster and they go, wow, you know, there's 11 rookies here and this team just isn't going to compete. And by, you know, kind of a struggle out through May and June, and by, you know, late July, early August, everybody's going, how is this team winning games? Is it kind of fun to play your style of baseball and just be a total irritant to everybody else in the league?
Yeah, it's different because we get that time and time again from fans, from other teams. Everyone just kind of, you know, going, how does Greg do it? And it's finding guys that were, you know, under-recruited or didn't get good looks, or, you know, and just being thoughtful and creative about how we have to put our roster together with our ballpark. And, yeah, it's kind of fun. You know, we like to call it getting rail-catted in the later innings. I don't know if that gets translated around the league or not.
Oh, yeah.
to keep it close and then find a way in the eighth or ninth inning to push that run across and hold on to it. And I think our team over the years, you know, we had a tough year last year, but has taken a kind of great pride in being that group of guys that can go in and maybe doesn't have quite as many guys with big pedigrees as some of the other clubs and do very well and hold their own.
Well, we hear Radio Canada once in a while here, like a few other select words along with it, but yeah.
Yeah, I have no doubt.
Yeah, I remember Josh Robertson. I was sitting up with the Wichita Wingnuts one night in their press box, and he was saying to me, I hate those rail cats, like playing a bunch of gnats, just constantly irritating at you, you know. I thought, well, that's why they win, you know, that's why it happens. So.
Yeah, we're trying to keep ourselves in it and give ourselves, you know, big, higher percentage of chances to make quality plays and give us a chance at the end, and that's just kind of the name of the game of how Greg's been so successful over the last 15 years with us.
Well, this is going to kind of lead into an interesting discussion with you, Brian, because we want to kind of encompass a lot within the changes in the minor league system and what's going on there in the Frontier League with the Can-Am League combining leagues together and stuff. But let's start out with looking at this. Dan Vaughn, the broadcaster in Kansas City, who was a broadcaster for you guys there in Gary for a while, was talking about the fact that the league has talked about the fact that the league has really drawn in a lot of AAA talent, a lot of AA guys, a lot of major league talent. And has it gotten to a point where it's more difficult for Greg to run the style of team that he has just because the talent level in the league has gotten to be so good?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting comment, and one that we've had, especially when we had a tough season last year, that we had chatted about a little bit of, you know, do we need to make some adjustments on how we go about finding guys and those kind of things. So maybe you might see us chase down a few more of players that have that double-A pedigree than maybe we have in the past. To try to make up for that, because you're right. Even the, it's crazy to say, but I'm in my eighth year being involved with the Railcats, and there's no doubt the caliber of play over my time here has definitely risen. And so it, I think it makes it a little bit more tricky. There's less chance for us to miss on younger guys. They need to come in and produce, and if they can't, it's certainly possible that we'll take a look at some older guys to kind of help that along.
Now, as you examine that then, and you're already having this kind of discussion about maybe this is something we need to do, do you approach the off season a little differently than you have in the past, or does Greg kind of follow the same pattern of hanging on to some guys that he wants to build as the foundation of the team and then piecing together what he needs to finish out the roster?
We'll always piece it together with some foundation guys that we think that can be productive for us over multiple years, in the hopes of 3 and 4 or 5 years out of some folks. But I think maybe they expand the number, we're in, let's say, 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, we're looking for some veterans in maybe 3 or 4 spots. Maybe that number is closer to 5 or 6 now, trying to find some guys with some real time in affiliated baseball to come in and lead in a couple of different spots than maybe we looked for in the past.
Now let's look back at kind of what's going on here in the Can-Am League, if we could, for just a moment.
Sure.
So talk a little bit about how this is going to affect Schaumburg for you next year.
So it's interesting. So we're going from what was a 10-team and Midwestern-ish footprint to 14 teams and spanning basically from the Atlantic Ocean to the Mississippi River. So I think it's going to be really good. Get our players to some new markets and diversify the league a little bit. And probably the biggest thing is some of the travel issues that we deal with in the American Association. The guys in the Frontier League are trying to sort out now on, their longest rides were 7 or 8 hours in the past, and now we're going to have some, 16, 17-hour rides and how that affects things and players. So it's going to be interesting. And then how the Can-Am teams have to adjust to the difference in roster rules into the Frontier League, which is geared much towards much younger players and age limits and all of those kind of things, and seeing how they're able to kind of shape their rosters and see how that turns itself out for 2020.
Has that been decided on yet, or are they still pulling out the details on how they're going to do that?
Most of the details got resolved. We just came back for some annual meetings in Arizona last week, so most of those details are taken care of now.
Could you elaborate a little bit on what that might look like?
Sure. So there's going to be up to 4 veteran classifications where there's not going to be an age limit, which is much different than how the Frontier League has operated in the past. There's still going to be an age limit, but it's going to be, instead of like this past year was 27, for 2020 it's going to be 28. So essentially, you can't turn 28 during the baseball season. Is the rule. There's still minimum number of rookies at 10, so you still have to carry a pretty large number of younger guys, but the biggest difference is having the 4 spots to fill out with guys of any age of your choosing. But the interesting thing is just like the American Association, there's a salary cap, so you still have to make it all work over the 110-day schedule.
Was the salary cap adjusted then for the four veteran players?
Yes, it was raised up. I mean, probably depending on which club you ask, whether it actually adjusts for the four vets or not. But it was increased.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. I would gather that from now you've got to kind of oversee American Association and Frontier. Is this a good kind of transition for you? Are you enjoying this move for the league then?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think anytime you can get some older players into the ballparks, maybe some have an opportunity to go chase down some household names, especially for us in the Chicago market, where that might be a little bit more readily available than some others, that we can add to the excitement onto the field and put a better product out there for our fans. It's good. So yeah, I'm excited to see how it plays itself out for the year, and how Jamie Bennett, who does a wonderful job for us, shapes the roster with kind of these new back lines.
Now, I want to kind of comment on something Kevin has talked a bit about over the last year that I found really interesting, is a lot of ownership groups in the Frontier League seem to be jumping to these college summer leagues. Is this just pure money? I mean, I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's pure money or market or perception of better value. It's certainly interesting, but then you look at some of the proposed rules that they're talking about, where they're going to push the draft back and hold guys over and kind of take over. Their college summer league may not be in existence down the line. So it's really interesting model right now as they talk about, moving the college baseball season to starting, March or April and running it through the end of the summer when the draft's in August. So that's really interesting decision that some of the folks that have made to make those moves are going to have to put their hands around over the next couple of years. But there's no doubt it's a little bit less expensive to run in a college with that league, but then it comes up to your market and municipality and fans of what kind of baseball you want to expose your fans to.
Okay. I think you look at a market such as Schaumburg, where they've had professional baseball since 1999, and I just don't see where they're going to be as accepting if it ever came to be where you had a college summer league. They're smart enough to know what professional baseball is as opposed to college.
Yeah.
You get some of these markets, they just want to have a place to go have a cold beer and there's a game in front of them, great. But I think it's an established market like Schaumburg or some of the markets in the Frontier, I just think the fans want a good product out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, how many home games do you want? In college with bat, you're not starting until June, you're done by the 1st of August. Well, and you guys are out of Minnesota, some of the best weather we're going to get all summer in both Chicago and Minnesota. It happens from August to Labor Day, and in college with bat league you're already shut down by then. So who wants to give up the best month of summer baseball for it? So that's one of the downsides to me is, yeah, maybe you play a little bit in May when the weather might be a little tougher, but that August into September is some of the nicest weather we get. I think our fans and the Schaumburg market and Gary market and kind of across baseball, they want to sit outside and enjoy baseball during those, during that time.
Yeah, I was just reading an article out of New Britain where the New Britain Bees went under in the Atlantic League, and now they're getting replaced by a Prospects League or whatever they got for collegiate ball out east. I know it's not Cape Cod, but the thing they lamented in the news article, you're going from fans getting 70 home games a season to 28.
Yep, 28. So, that's what we had that with our team. They went to the Futures League, which is the league that we did have a team in it up until the end of September. And yeah, it's a whole different model. You don't have six or seven game home stands. Your heaviest week of the summer, you might have four home games, but they might not be on back-to-back days. So it's a whole different logistics and way to go about it. And I don't know if I could give up August baseball in any of our markets. It's just that's the best time of summer for me to get fans out to enjoy some baseball.
I like that month because you get a little late enough in August, around August 10, August 15, there's some nights you just get that little bit of a chill.
Yep.
As you get around the 10 o'clock hour, and it's just ideal.
Yeah,
you felt like you survived the hot summer.
Yeah, you start seeing that fall sky roll in, but it's still warm enough to enjoy some weather, and especially in the northern, you know, when you know winter's coming and you want to soak in all that time. So I get the idea, less home games if you can cram it all the same in, but I think a lot of folks want baseball all summer, not just for, you know, a 9-week window.
You know, I want to come back onto the roster rules with you for a moment, Brian, because one of the things we were kind of wondering is, every Frontier League team will now has the potential to take on 4 veteran players. How do you feel that might affect the American Association? Because, you know, that opens some additional veteran spots between the two leagues right there with them merging that way. And I'm wondering if that actually makes it a little tougher for American Association teams to find those veterans now.
There's no doubt that it could. You know, there's definitely going to be, four, you know, at least 9 new teams into the market that didn't have vets last year that can go chase them and offer, depending upon where the player is from. You know, the American Association doesn't have a presence in the St. Louis market, so some St. Louis vets that want to play, you know, closer to home may be interested in that kind of thing. But yeah, there's no doubt. It means we're going to have to, you know, our managers across the league are going to have to do a good job of selling American Association baseball and up against what the Frontier League has going on, and put, you know, the guys that each respective league is sending on to, you know, to affiliated opportunities, you know, up to it, and then sell them what the opportunity is at the ballpark, right? You know, playing every day versus, you know, rotational or you know, spot starts or whatever that might look like. It could be different, you know, needs for both leagues. So it's definitely going to increase the competition to get the older guys.
So what are we looking at with, you know, we're talking about it's going to be a little tougher to get the veterans, but what did the roster adjustments in the Frontier League, did that open up more LS2, LS3 guys for the American Association?
But yeah, potentially, yeah. I think that the interesting thing is that the Frontier League teams now are going to have to restart thinking about how some of their older guys who would probably fit in that LS2, LS3, and the AA, like, you know, when they age out, well, now they're not aging out anymore, so it might make that was a little bit harder to come by, because those rights don't have to be just, you know, relinquished any longer. It might be AA teams might have to get a little bit more creative, making some trades with the Frontier League teams to get access to some of those guys than maybe they have in the past if they just let them age out.
You know, I think one of the interesting things that people are looking at, Brian, is how the Atlantic League rules are going to affect players' development and their desire to play in other independent leagues. Are you kind of hearing, are you guys are pitching the idea of maybe you don't want to play in that Atlantic League because you don't want to be 62 feet away or whatever the case may be?
The ironic thing is we're getting a whole bunch of phone calls from guys who are so nervous about it that they're going to be judged up against numbers that, you know, everyone else is standardized, that they're a little leery about the Atlantic League, as at least the feedback that we've gotten. So I think maybe a full year to watch it shake out will give us a little bit better indication, but at least the information that we're hearing is that guys are, you know, now all of a sudden their numbers are going to be skewed either one way or the other because, you know, they're not playing the same game anymore because the dimensions aren't the same, and how that affects them from an evaluation standpoint. You know, everyone's trying to move up and move on and get their shot at getting to the big leagues and, you know, sliding the plate back and, you know, lowering the mound or whatever it is they might be doing out there. You know, how does that impact them? So they're all, I think it seems like a whole bunch of players are pretty nervous about it all.
Now, I also wanted to ask you, this is kind of an exciting time in independent baseball in general. Your league is combining, so you're going to have 14 teams. American Association has added on a team in Milwaukee, and it looks like we're going to get a couple of teams potentially in Texas. Do you see kind of the expansion of the American Association right now? Do you see this team reaching a 16, 18? I mean, what's kind of your goal you would like to see the league reach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we've set a specific number. I think the biggest thing is you want to add quality owners, quality markets, and quality operations. You know, if you check all three of those, then that's certainly a conversation that we're interested to add. So, yeah, I think that, you know, adding another 2, 4, 6 teams, I think certainly possible. And then depending upon how, you know, all this news with MILB shakes itself out over the next 12 to 15 months is going to be interesting. I mean, I'm sure you guys saw the list that they put out today of all the markets they're talking about potentially moving on from, and what does that do to the scope of independent baseball and the already established leagues? It's going to be, I think, a pretty wild ride over the next year and a half to see how it all kind of plays itself out and everyone's slot, you know, positions themselves in the landscape.
I think the big team and the team that caught my eye the most that would get cut out was Quad Cities.
Yeah, kind of on an if and based on a new stadium development, right? That's kind of an interesting one. Puts that owner probably in a little bit more limbo than he'd like to be.
But boy, I mean, if they get dropped from MILB, I could see easily see American Association or Frontier League picking them up. So
sure,
I don't
yeah.
think they'd be without a. Just a matter of trying to figure out how to keep the ballpark from flooding every year.
No kidding. And that some of those sites from last year are pretty incredible with watching kind of it on an island of its own. And I think that there's a whole bunch of markets that you know, Quad Cities is probably a natural one into the footprint of the American Association. And you know, there's a bunch more with the expanded footprint of the Frontier League that may make sense for them. So and then what kind of appetite do owners and you know, in those markets and municipalities to take on independent baseball, as it's a little bit different model than what minor league baseball is. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out. And my guess is the winter meetings that are going to take place here in about 3.5 weeks are going to be really interesting on the minor league baseball side.
I think today, too, the Congress sent a letter to MLB, kind of an initial shot about, hey, you know, if you're messing around with this too much and some good communities that are still paying for ballparks are losing their teams, just remember you got the antitrust exemption that's never going to be a for sure thing. So I think you're going to see this maybe get played out on a political level, too, before it's all over, unless they decide to ditch their current plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. So one of their big reasons that they want to condense down is they talked about facility having issues, right? Well, yes, if you eliminate all of these 40 that don't have wonderful facilities and the markets aren't quite geographically extensive and that saves the most money for everyone, that's fine now. But what happens in 10 years when some of these other ballparks are ready to get rebuilt? Do you think public funding is going to come real simple? I think that, I don't know, it's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, definitely politicians are going to get involved. I mean, these are 40 communities that have invested millions and millions of dollars into it, and you know, communities that, you know, kind of are expecting to have baseball and have had them for 50, 60, 70, 80 years. So I think it's going to be a really interesting, I don't know that it's going to be as cut and dry of a deal as it's been laid out so far.
Yeah, I think about, you know, when they changed the law to make it so that minor league baseball players were going to receive minimum wage salaries, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be skeptical, but I always think when things like that happen that, you know, there's for every silver lining, there seems like there's a dark cloud around there somewhere. And I wondered if eventually this was going to lead them to say, well, we can't pay this many players this much money. And I mean, is you've been around minor league baseball for quite a while. Do you think that had any impact on this?
I mean, sure. I mean, at the end of the day, everything, you know, it's all a business, you know, from Major League Baseball down. So I'm certain it played an impact, you know, to it. I mean, you have some teams, you know, my Yankees, you know, for instance, have 200 minor leaguers because they have nine affiliates, you know, and some other teams only have five. So I'm sure, you know, money is the driver in all of this. And you have to believe that Major League Baseball feels they can still develop enough talent, you know, sans these 40 teams. And it's all going to get messy before it shakes out. You know, this might be the initial draft, but I would be shocked if it ended up going straight this way, you know, with the straight 42 off their initial proposal by the time it's all said and done.
You know, you said a term here that I'd like to ask you to elaborate on a little bit, because we've talked to a few people that have talked about wanting to ensure that they get the right ownership group that comes into the American Association, which I totally get. Kevin and I watch leagues that, you know, open up one season and they're shut down by the next. And I, that's disappointing for fans, disappointing for players. It gives them independent baseball a really bad reputation. So what are you really looking for that says we can count on these guys to stay in the league for a while?
Well, there's a formula that our league has from a financial strength position, and then, you know, are they local ownership? That always bodes really well. To, you know, are they located within the marketplace? And then, you know, some of it, a lot of it comes down to the municipality. You know, does the does the community that they're in want, you know, excited to have baseball and American Association baseball? And then, you know, do you find a quality operator, you know, the quality front office staff to go out there and put a promotional schedule together and sell the corporate partnerships and drive fans to games and all of those things? And, you know, they all have to work together for it to work in the markets. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that that's probably our biggest strength in the American Association is how quality our ownership group is. And just making sure that we're very thoughtful about adding new markets and new owners that fit within, you know, the strength that we currently have. You're right, you know, some leagues, teams, you know, open up one and close the next, and by and large, we've been pretty darn stable in the American Association, and that's due to the quality of the ownerships and their interest and investment in their teams and their markets and their staffs and finding those guys that want to do the same thing.
When you look at the combination now of the two leagues coming together between the Can-Am and the Frontier League, is there a potential that we could see a champions in the American Association battling against the champions in that league?
Ooh, I don't know if that's on the horizon. We haven't had any discussions along that way, so I don't think that there's anything that will be, you know, imminent along those lines.
Is that something you'd like to see happen?
The East has always come out pretty good on that one. I remember when the Northern League did that with Central and the East, and in large part, thanks to Georgia Sabas, two of the years, the East always came out ahead in that one. So maybe maybe the American Association kind of wants to steer away from that for now.
yeah, perhaps. Yeah, the interesting thing was is we had a Frontier League Can-Am Pride All-Star game, and you saw what came from that, so.
Very true. As you approach into the 2020 season for the Gary South Shore Railcats, is there anything that you're looking at right now that you would like to see change about the team, or we're going to kind of see Railcat baseball like we've seen over the last few years?
Well, we're definitely going to see the continuation of Railcat baseball. I think we're going to see some probably decent-sized roster change based on some of the challenges that we had. And, you know, we had a couple of guys get signed into to affiliated ball that we were counting on to be integral parts of our roster. And unfortunately, once those guys went on to those opportunities, we weren't able to replace it. So, like I said earlier, I think we'll probably look to upgrade some spots with some older guys kind of across pitching and offense. But, you know, Greg's going to manage what he's been successful with, and last year notwithstanding, we've been basically in it to the last weekend for the entirety of my time here and most of the time that Greg's been running it. You know, prior to last season, we were the only team in the AA to make the playoffs in back-to-back seasons, so we're still going to do what we do. The ballpark isn't used necessarily to hit 20 or 25 home runs, so if we find the right guy that we think can come in and we can stick in the middle of the lineup, they can add some power to it and won't get frustrated with the ballpark, then we'll certainly take a solid look at that. But I think you're going to see the real catch run out there and you know, work counts and you know, have quality at bats and make smart pitching decisions and hit and run and play tight ball games and hopefully close a few more out this year than we did last year.
Well, I don't want to say I don't think there's any coincidence that Brian Leiter moves from general manager to the president of the Salve Sports and the team struggles. Something's going on there. Just point it out, Brian.
Yeah. Well, if I had a bigger role in player development than other than just chatting with tags about a couple of guys here and there, then I would say you're probably right. But if I'm the one putting together baseball teams, that I think they'd be going in the wrong direction for sure.
How are things looking off the field? I've always been impressed. You've always carried really good attendance numbers in an area that, you know, some critics have panned. That's probably not the safest part of town to go out at night. But, you know, you've kept the numbers up, and I've always been impressed with your promotions. And I have to say this before I forget. I think it was 2018, you guys did that series of The Office promotions, and Me sitting up there in St. Paul, I was extremely jealous because I am a huge fan of The Office, and I just love the Dwight Schrute jerseys you guys had.
Yeah, it was fortunate. I think four of us in the front office in 2018, The Office, myself included, is our favorite TV show, so it was just kind of the conversation probably about this time of the year that, you know, we started talking about just doing a one office game, and by the time we walked out of the office that day, we're like, we have to do this. We have to pick a day. We just can't get all the fun things we can do with The Office into one day. So it just kind of grew from there to do it, you know, every Wednesday. No, things are good. You're right. You know, Gary is a challenged community, and they certainly have their struggles, but we're really fortunate, you know. While Northwest Indiana is considered part of Chicagoland, they really identify themselves separately from the city, and you know, we're easy in and out off of the road. We have a beautiful ballpark, and fortunately, our fans have trusted us with their entertainment dollars and their safety, and things are good. You know, we had to, some changeover in our front office with myself moving up and bringing in folks from out, and you know, group sales and corporate partnerships are strong, and the promotions are good, and we're going to continue working on growing this thing and making baseball continue to happen in downtown Gary as they work to move some things. There's some exciting things going on. They're moving casinos off the harbor and down off of the 8094, and it's going to be a Hard Rock Granite Casino that's supposed to open next December. So there's some good things happening in Gary, and we're going to continue to keep pushing Railcats baseball in Northwest Indiana and drive fans. And you know, most everyone says, you know, once you walk into the gates, you're just sitting in another minor league ballpark. It could be anywhere in the country, and we take super, super pride on making sure that we can provide a safe environment for our fans to come out to, and by and large, they've done a really good job of coming out and supporting us, and we couldn't be more thankful, because they're driving, you know, probably a little bit further than most places to come to ball games, and you know, we're gonna put together another fun promotional slate this year, and keep having some fun out there with them.
Now, I'm noticing a little bit of a weakness with your broadcaster's football prediction abilities. Meanwhile, in St. Paul, we've got our radio guy is going out to Vegas and hitting on multiple five-team parlays. And Jared, I'd say, best is probably so on his NFL picks on Twitter.
Yeah, he's got some challenges here and there, right? But, you know, the good news is in Indiana, we have legalized sports betting, so we don't even have to go to Vegas anymore. We just go right down the road.
Yeah, I'm really liking that, because I was past that now, too, where, you know, if you're in Sioux Falls for visiting your team on the road, you can. It's like a half hour to drive to this resort casino that's technically in Iowa. So,
yeah. Well, Jared takes after me with the bet, because I've been to two different books just for fun to watch some college football, and I have not done real well on my betting skills this fall. I'll tell you that.
Well, I can understand that, Brian, because I've always said I might as well walk into a casino and throw $20 on the floor and walk out, because that's what's going to happen to it anyway.
So, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. I feel your pain. That's me as well.
You know, Brian, I want to ask you about something that I am really impressed about the whole Gary organization, and that is the fact that in Chicago they have two Major League Baseball teams and all of these minor league teams around there, and professional football and basketball and hockey, but they send writers out from the major newspapers covering you guys. I find that amazing, and I don't know what's going on in other cities, but boy, you guys have sure figured out a way to get things done right there.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, you know, the Chicago Tribune has, you know, kind of their offshoots that cover the suburbs, and the Post Tribune comes out and covers us really regularly, and, you know, the Northwest Indiana Times is based in Munster, and one of the, I think, the second biggest paper in the state of Indiana, and I think we're one of the very few markets that of our size that has two kind of localized newspapers that still send them out. So while we're still competing with for coverage with some of the, you know, all of the other teams and the Cubs and the Sox, and we have a nice little niche in Northwest Indiana that we still have access to that, because you're right, it's pretty unique, you know. Our team at Schaumburg, the Daily Herald, you know, we have a good partnership with, but we don't see a whole lot of beat coverage anymore. So I think that's probably coming few and farther between. So We try to take good care of them when they come out to see us, and we've been fortunate. We have a relationship with both of them, and try to keep some winning baseball for them to come out and watch and cover for their audiences.
So it's kind of interesting. In the 2018 playoffs, I live in Faribault, Minnesota, which is an hour south of St. Paul. Well, I'm rolling into the press box before game one, and I'm seeing the guy that's the stringer that night for Northwest Indiana Times.
Yep.
And he's got a Faribault Falcons shirt on. I'm like, what is going on here? That is my hometown. Well, it ends up the guy is like some kind of marketing director for the local high school. And here he is, two guys from Faribault up in St. Paul covering a playoff baseball game.
Yeah, so at the time the sports editor for the Times was from the St. Paul area, which certainly helped having some connections up there to do that. But yeah, I mean, that's incredible. Right now, very many papers are gonna go to that to cover the team. So we're super fortunate to have that, and we appreciate all the coverage and stories and their just general interest in doing it. And hopefully we bring some interesting content to them outside of just what's happening on the field with some. Some stories from some of our guys' backgrounds. I think that's interesting, as everybody in minor league baseball, all the players have a really interesting story behind them, especially some of our foreign guys. We've had a pretty decent contingent of guys from Latin America over the last couple of years, and some of the challenges that, getting guys from Venezuela, which is in a pretty politically challenged, space right now, into the country, and what the stark contrast, and life, what life is like back there, for them with what's going on here in America. I think that's some compelling content.
Didn't you also have a Japanese player this year?
We did, absolutely. We use a lot of Google Translate to try.
Oh, yeah, I hear that's going to be quite popular.
Yeah, he didn't speak a lick of English, and something really interesting about him was that because he was a former Nippon League guy, the NBC of Tokyo sent a film crew over, and they spent like 6 or 8 days with us watching him get loose. They went on the road when we went to Fargo and followed him there. I mean, it was kind of wild to see.
That's pretty crazy. Well, Brian, Kevin and I learned before the show that you're a big Yankees fan, so I'm gathering that you're pretty upset about this news that's out there about the Astros right now.
Yeah, that's a little disappointing with all the implications and things that are put out there. But probably at the end of the day, I was more disappointing in the fact that the Yankees didn't play just a little bit better in the postseason. They got behind early in games and couldn't claw back, and it just wasn't our year. So we're gonna have to reset and probably chase a little bit of starting pitching and see if we can't make another run at it next year.
Well, you still own the Twins.
Yeah, that's incredible. So we have some folks on our Schaumburg staff who are from Minnesota and who are huge Twin fans, and I didn't actually realize that it was so bad that it was what, like 14 straight, 15 straight playoff games or whatever it is. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, Minnesota.
I think most of them were to the Yankees.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Yankees have owned them. I didn't realize it went back it goes back over a decade, doesn't it?
Right. Oh, yeah. I think all the way back to like 2004, I believe, was the Twins' 8-1 win out at Yankee Stadium that year.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could say they're due.
That's what we were thinking, but the streak kind of goes on.
Yeah, there's always next year, right?
Well, let's hope they're not in Chicago Cub territory talking like that.
No kidding, right? Yeah.
We also learned, Brian, I know you got to be pretty excited about how your Buffalo Bills are playing right now.
Big time. So I was born right before the four straight Super Bowl losses. So I was just a toddler when little kid when that was going on. So the only, outside of the playoff appearance that they made 2 years ago, the only other one in my lifetime that I even have memory of was 1999 with Doug Flutie and Rob Johnson and the Music City Miracle. So the fact that we have another shot again in the playoffs this year is very exciting to me.
Well,
now, do you get out to Buffalo and catch any games?
Yeah, so I'll take my family back for Thanksgiving here, I guess next week. And I haven't yet, to be honest with you, I wish I probably should know the answer to this. I haven't looked to see if they're home. I've been to maybe one every other year I get to a game in Buffalo to catch up to New Era Field and those guys. So I'm not so sure how good we are this year. I know we're 7-3, but as you guys I'm sure are aware, the strength of schedule has not been real strong. So we'll see. I was excited to see when we played the Pats real tough early on, and then had but we're beating the teams we're supposed to, but I'm not sure how real they are just yet. They haven't convinced me.
No, I'm not really a football guy, so I probably know more about the Bills Mafia than I do the Bills itself. And now, have you ever joined in these festivities?
I have seen them. I have never jumped off of ladder, car, other person onto a folding table lit on fire. But I have watched it. Yes, I think
there you go. There's a promotion for next year in Erie, Bills Mafia Night.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually a great idea. I'm gonna write that down. We were so bad for so long, there was nothing else to do, right? So you might as well have a good time at the tailgate. So.
If you get Jared to do that, I definitely want footage. I just want to say that up front.
Yeah, that's fair, right?
Well, okay, so we're gonna.
Jared's light; he can withstand a fall through a table.
Yeah, he'll be just fine.
Unfortunately, Brian, it looks like the Bills are playing the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, which means it's nationally televised, so it probably won't go real well based on their past history. So. I can't remember the last time they won a primetime game. So, but I'm encouraged. Josh Allen's been pretty good. That defense, I think, is real. So I think I think they've got a good thing going. I think it'll be tough with their schedule not being so strong. It'll be tough for them not to make the playoffs this year. And then, once you get in, who knows, right?
Well, just so you know, I will definitely be voting for them, because if Satan was playing the Cowboys, I would be voting for Satan. I just want to throw that out there. So
yeah, I mean that's fair. I'm not a real Cowboy fan either. And it's interesting for me out here in Chicagoland, and everybody's on suicide watch out here with the way the Bears are playing after last year, and then my little Buffalo Bills are plugging right along. So it's been an interesting.
So Rob just Dallas Cowboys. So there goes any plugs of the show from Brett Allred or Dan.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah,
absolutely right.
Yeah, Rob, you're going to be dead to them for a while.
And I'm okay with that, because again, Dallas. So just terrible, yeah. Terrible.
Yeah, no good.
See, a big plans heading back to Buffalo. At least I would assume you get some snow then, big time snow.
Yeah, they've already got a lot of snow going there. I'm actually hoping I didn't get out last year. I'm actually hoping to do some downhill skiing when I get back. There's about a medium-sized ski slopes about 25 minutes from where I grew up outside of Buffalo in Holiday Valley. So I'm hoping to get some downhill time in if the weather will hold for me next week. And maybe I won't hit a tree. You never know.
Let's hope so. And Kevin, yeah. Kevin, I want to say I think that Dan and Brad will still be plugging the show. They'll just refer to it as This Week in the Association with Kevin Luco. I think that's just all it'll be from now on. So I think we'll be okay.
So good. What's your name? John here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Brian, we wanted to give you an opportunity to give us a final thought before we close out this week's show.
Well, I just appreciate you guys having me on and keeping the fans up to date with what's going on with the American Association and Minor League Baseball and Junior throughout the year. And we're excited to get 2020 underway and Gary, and working hard at putting together a fun promotion and building a quality baseball team and getting back to our winning ways and giving the folks up in the rest of the North a run for their money this summer. So. We're going to take a little respite here over the next couple of weeks for Thanksgiving and the holidays, and then we're going to be ready to get right after it in January. We can only hope that warm weather and sunshine are going to be followed very shortly.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us here, Brian. For Kevin Luco, I am Rob Panier, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.